Hi, I'm Sandy Okanicki, your host for today's In Focus program. Our guest today is John Staton, author of Fat, A Life Unfiltered. Thanks for coming to the program, John.
Thank you so much. I'm really happy to be here.
So you are a self-publisher.
Yes.
Now, explain a little to our listeners what a self-publisher is.
Well, in the modern publishing era, self-publishing has really taken off as one of the easiest and most efficient ways for authors to get their work available for sale and out to the public. So the self-publishing process basically means that I, as the author, create everything, including the formatting of the file into a format that the self-publishing platform wants you to use, and it will vary from platform to platform. And then you send it to them, essentially. And they usually take 2 to 3 days to kind of look through it, make sure that there aren't any kind of significant issues with it. And then your book becomes available for sale. In my case, it was on Amazon.com within 48 hours of me sending that file. And it was also available in the Kindle ebook edition at the same time. I mean, there's several significant benefits to the self-publishing side of doing things. I think one of the most significant is that the books are printed on demand. So what that means is, you know, I'm a proofreader by training, but, you know, along the way, I found a couple of typos.
Right.
And I was able to go back and fix those, and it uploads immediately, and the next purchaser of the book has the corrected copy. So that's one significant benefit that comes with self-publishing. Also, the cost. The Amazon platform, there's no upfront cost.
Okay.
It's completely free. Some platforms will charge a small fee at the beginning, but for me, it was free.
Now, is Amazon the only one who is doing this, or is there other publishers out there that will do this?
There's several others that are out there. A couple of the other more widely used ones are a company called Ingram Spark. They have an upfront cost or fee.
Okay.
But they are, the benefit that I've heard from users of Ingram Spark is that the distribution channels through them in terms of getting it into book catalogs and libraries and those kinds of places is a little easier than it is using the Amazon platform. Barnes & Noble also has a self-published feature, and Schuller's here in the Michigan area,
right,
out of Grand Rapids, they also have a self-publishing option. Information about those is readily available on their websites. You can look and see how their process works. They all have some pros and some cons, I think, depending on, you know, what your ultimate goal,
right,
is with the book. But yeah, it's a great channel. And what we also, as in the self-published author community, some of what we are hearing too is that your large traditional publishing houses watch the self-publishing world. And
okay,
if your book is doing really well, they are starting to come and then seek you out to come on board with them.
Okay, I was going to ask you that question. You know, how does a self-publisher become an author who now have people seeking them out, get an agent,
mm-hmm,
things like that?
From what I understand, and you know, I'm not an expert in this,
right,
by any means, but
right,
from my experience and from the research that I've done, literature agents are becoming less common, primarily because of self-publishing. The publishing houses are, the traditional publishing houses are hiring people to monitor what's going on in the self-publishing realm. And where self-published authors are doing well, they can then bypass that agent process because the agent obviously takes a cut of the profits either from the publisher or from the author.
Right.
And they have to make a living as well. So, yeah, they're kind of not as common as they used to be. And the publishing houses, if they see a self-published author doing a good job and selling a lot of books, typically they will then reach out and offer a package of some sort where they may agree to take you on as one of their authors. And that can come with the benefits of much enhanced marketing,
right,
and promotion,
right,
which is huge because that's probably the most difficult piece of the self-published world is you're your own marketer and promoter until somebody notices you. And that's a lot of work. It's a lot of knocking on doors.
Yeah. I mean, like James Patterson.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, he probably, I'm assuming, went through struggles too.
Mm-hmm.
But he's now, look, he's probably made millions off his books.
Sure. Sure. Actually, where I live in Florida now, Stephen King lives nearby.
I had him right on the tip of my tongue. That's who I was going to talk about next, was Stephen King.
He lives in a humongous multi-million dollar mansion out on one of the Florida barrier islands, and that's only one of his homes. So, yes, I mean, an author of that magnitude can certainly make a significant amount of money, but they also started somewhere.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And, you know, the publishing world was likely, for Stephen King anyhow, and I'm assuming for James Patterson, was probably a lot different than it is today. Self-publishing was probably not anything like it is today. But yeah, you know, we're all looking, I guess, for that break, the person who notices our work and is willing to get it in front of the right people. And self-published or using an agent, I mean, that's part of what an agent would do, is getting your work in front of people. But that's what I'm doing for myself, too. I'm my own agent.
Right.
And trying to get this into the hands of the right people, with the hope that it will be picked up and, you know, I can begin to gain a much larger outside audience than what I currently have just getting started.
Now, you put a lot of work into this. You've been, for the past year, have dived right into getting this book out to the public.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Now, what type of steps have you taken to do that?
Well, I think for every author, that process is a little bit different.
Okay.
For me, this book had its beginning several years ago after I had a significant weight loss experience. And I initially had planned to write the self-help, rah, 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 you can do it too,
right,
kind of book. But then a problem grew, literally, and that was me. I grew. I started getting bigger again. And
okay.
So I felt like it was disingenuous in some ways for me to go out and promote this great experience when I was no longer the poster child of weight loss success.
Right.
So I shelved it for a period of time. And then in January 2019, I decided it was time to bring it back out and to write about what the actual reality of living life as a person with an extreme weight problem was all about and what that's like. And so I used some of the initial content, but then I created probably about 60 to 70% new content at that time.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah.
So you switched it up.
I switched it up.
Because of your weight gain.
Right.
Okay.
Right. And so my writing process then was, I said, I need ideas. That was the first thing that came to my mind. And they would come to me at any time. You know, I'd be out walking, shopping, whatever. And suddenly I would remember a story from my past of something related to my weight. So I kept my iPhone close by at all times, and I would just jot down the idea. And that's where I started. And when I got to having 30 to 40 ideas, I thought, okay, this is a good starting point now. Let's get writing. And, you know, I've worked in writing for publications, magazines, written articles and newspaper articles and all those kinds of things. But for my book, I'm more of a stream of consciousness kind of author. So I just sat down, looked at my list, recalled the story, and boom, just started typing. And over time, I collected those stories together. And then I went back and went through them and cleaned them up significantly.
Okay.
And went through an self-editing kind of a process.
Okay.
And then once everything was kind of coalesced, and along the way I started thinking about the book's structure.
Right.
You know, how is this going to fit together? How am I going to tie it together? As that plan developed and it came together as kind of a singular unit, my next step was finding people to review it for me to give feedback on their responses. And so I went through that process. And once that was done, I spent a lot of time on the Amazon publishing platform figuring out how it needed to be formatted for them. They have great video tutorials. They have something called KDP University. Amazon's platform is called Kindle Direct Publishing, so
okay.
KDP. And the platform, they have classes and online training that you can take for various aspects of the process. And yeah, so after some significant editing and piecing that all together, created the file, and bam, there it was.
Wow.
And the cover also I had done professionally because I wanted a professional looking cover. KDP does offer what they call Cover Creator, which will let you just kind of create your own right on the platform.
Right.
But I had worked with an excellent graphic designer at the college where I worked, and I asked him to do the cover for me. So, and that just comes to me as a PDF that you upload with the file as well, and it's all part of the package.
Now, what are these catalogs that you are talking about? talk, these book catalogs. What is that?
So libraries in particular, but also bookstores, usually there are large book warehouses or publishing warehouses. Baker Company is a big one that a lot of people use. I'm not sure if I have that full name right, but I know Baker is in it.
Okay.
So they're all online these days, not a print catalog. But if a library starts to hear, for instance, if the Owosso or the Shiawassee Library were to start getting requests, hey, I heard this guy on the radio and I want to read his book.
Right.
The first place that they would likely go to is whatever catalog they use or company they use for ordering books.
Oh.
And there are often contracts in place on those kinds of things so that they can get them at a reduced cost. And that's how most of your libraries and bookstores will get their actual titles that they carry.
Okay.
It's through one of those large online catalogs.
Okay. Now, what made you want to write this book? What was your inspiration? Yes, we know it's weight loss, but it's not just weight loss.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's something else. It's something deeper inside.
Right, right.
What was it, John?
Well, I had two goals that I set before me as I was writing the book. The first was I wanted people who have had a lifelong battle with obesity, and especially extreme obesity, to understand and find out they're not alone. I think people who struggle with that will see themselves in a lot of these stories. And it's helpful, I know it's helpful for me to realize that there are others out there who have similar experiences and understand the pain and the difficulty that comes along with living life as an extremely obese person. My second goal for the book was kind of the opposite of that, and that was to provide a window into the life of the obese for people who've never had a weight problem. And especially if they have a loved one who has a weight problem and they have a difficult time understanding, you know, why don't you just stop eating so much? Why don't you just exercise more? And, you know, some of those things that to them just seem to make perfect sense, but for us are incredibly difficult. And so I really wanted to provide a humorous read that would hopefully lower people's defenses so that they can really hear what the true experience is like and either find encouragement and hope for themselves on their journeys or experience some empathy and some understanding for somebody who struggles with something that they don't understand.
Now, what is your struggle? Do you just overeat or are you a sugarholic or tell us a little?
All of the above. I definitely have some significant particular problems, but
right.
Obesity has been with me my whole life. I don't recall ever not being the biggest kid in school and
really?
Having weight problems. I mean, it's been literally the story of my life.
Were you bullied at all during high
yes,
school?
Yes, yeah. Not significantly in high school, more junior high and elementary school.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I write about that. Readers will hear some of those experiences and what that was like for me to go through those types of things.
How did your parents treat it?
Well, my parents both have had struggles with weight at different times in their life. And my dad, when growing up, I felt like he was always on a diet.
Okay.
But my dad and I, we were also great, like, donut buddies and pastry buddies. And,
yeah.
You know, it's like, you know, if I was with him, let's go get a donut from White's Bakery
right.
or something like that, you know?
Right.
My mom had a significant weight problem when she was younger. And when she was in college, she lost well over 100 pounds and got down to about 135. Sorry, Mom, I just gave out your weight. down to about 135 pounds. And she has kept that off. She's never gained her weight back.
How many years?
Over 50 years now.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. And I say wow only because if you have never been overweight and been on a diet that you've lost 50 to 100 pounds, I don't think people think, oh, you lost 100 pounds, now you're great forever.
Right.
You're not great forever.
That's right. Statistically, somewhere between 90 and 95% of people who lose 100 pounds or more will gain it back, and often will gain back more. I mean, that's an incredibly high number in the statistical world to realize that 90 to 95%. And you know, you'll see this even with popular TV shows like The Biggest Loser. You know, 2 years after people leave the show, how many, I mean, they're same thing. 90% of the people who leave that show have gained the weight back. And what you'll read about in the book and what I talk about is that's mainly because there is a physical component to being overweight. But for those of us who are 100 pounds or more, it's much more of an emotional and mental type of issue that's at play.
Correct.
And that's where the real challenge comes in, because the addictive qualities of our behavior, it's just like any other addiction in many ways that people struggle with. You know, I treat food in a very addictive way.
Right.
The problem with it is I can't quit cold turkey. I have to continue eating turkey and other things in order to survive. So, you know.
Well, and the one thing when you're addicted to food versus being addicted to drugs and alcohol, you still have your mindset.
Right.
You know, so people may not look at it as an addiction or a disease. Mm-hmm. It's overeating. And to be really honest with you, John, I really do believe that being overweight is because a person is overeating.
Mm-hmm.
I have a thing called you are what you eat. Now, I do believe, though, that in some cases that a person is overweight because of something is off balance, mm-hmm, chemically. Mm-hmm. But that is for a doctor to diagnose.
Mm-hmm.
And my problem was is I thought something was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Physically, I did go to the doctor. I did get those tests done. And guess what? I was overeating.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Mm-hmm. So I think you have to be truthful.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm, I think people lie to themselves.
Yeah. So the book is divided into three sections.
Okay.
You'll laugh, you'll cry, you'll change. And in the you'll change section, I have a chapter called Denial and Truth.
Oh, okay.
And I talk about pretty much what you were just expressing. In order to be the size that I am currently, mm-hmm, and there are elements of denial that have been with me about my weight for years. When I was younger, you know, it didn't affect me all that much. I mean, it didn't affect me physically all that much. I mean, there was a lot of emotional stuff that came along with it because my problem is on display to everybody.
Correct.
But physically, I was pretty much able to keep up and do the things. But as I've aged, you know, high blood pressure has come along, high cholesterol at times has come along, type 2 diabetes has come along.
Yep.
You know, these types of things. And I can sit here and make excuses until I'm blue in the face for, you know, these health problems that I've had. But I had to face the truth and realize at the end of the day, it is my decision what I put in my mouth to eat and what I don't. But I would also say that, you know, behavior, and especially the behavior attached to our mental state of mind, that affects the overeating too. In addressing those behaviors, whether it's through therapy or whether it's through building community support, you know, all these types of things, which I talk about in the book also. That's where, similar to other addictions, you know, Overeaters Anonymous, for example, follows the same principles as Alcoholics Anonymous for the most part, because the behavior that's driving the overeating often comes from the same kind of place. Now, that's not true of everybody. And
correct.
And I talk in the book, too, about, you know, right now I'm technically, well, I'm supposed to weigh like 155 pounds, which
okay.
I'm like, I weighed that when I was in second grade. What are you talking about, you know? But you know, where I am right now, I'm definitely at least 120 to 130 pounds overweight. My type of obesity, the 100 pounds or more, mm-hmm, type of obesity, I think is a different kind of behavior problem than those who struggle with the 20 to 30 pounds that they yo-yo up and down,
mm-hmm,
you know, a diet here and a diet there. And, you know, as they age, they start to get some health, weight-related health problems. But, you know, maybe it's not as severe as, you know, like me having to go. I started taking blood pressure medicine when I was 15.
Right, right.
You know? And I was able to stop taking blood pressure medicine during the years that I maintained a healthy weight. And then as my weight crept up, eventually I had to go back on the blood pressure medicine again. So it's kind of a different, it's not that one problem is more important or deserves more attention than the other, but I think that they are very different. I think the mindset and the behavior of an extremely obese person oftentimes dealing with low self-esteem, a lot of self-hatred, have struggled with this problem for what seems like an eternity, just want to give up, and that type of mentality versus the, oh man, you know, I eat too many tacos, I eat too many donuts, and I've gained 20 pounds, and yeah, I better go on a diet for a while and lose those 20 pounds. I mean, not that that person's struggle isn't important too, but it's different.
Right.
It's just different.
What was the defining factor, John, to lose weight in your life the first time?
First time that I actually thought significantly about, like, I've got to do something. I was 31 years old, and I felt terrible, physically terrible. I mean, I was just awful, sluggish, and in a lot of pain. Went to my doctor thinking that, you know, gosh, do I have cancer or something? You know, because it just felt so horrible, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And my doctor, you know, ran some tests and things, and then I went back to visit him, and he looked at me right in the eye, and he said, John, he said, if you don't do something about your weight, you're going to be dead by the time you're 50. And the last 10 years of your life are going to be miserable. And that was just a proverbial 2x4 that I needed right then and there to wake up and realize, oh my gosh, I'm 31. He's telling me I might have a decade before my life is miserable and 2 decades before I'm dead. And I started thinking about how many extremely fat 70 and 80 year olds do you see walking around? They don't exist.
Right.
And so that's when I finally realized, okay, I've got to do something about this problem. And went home and just started doing some research, started thinking about, you know, what was going to actually work or not work. And for the first time in my life, I started paying attention to what I was eating.
Yes. Well, I'll tell you a little story. I was 45 years old, very unhappy. I weighed well over 210 pounds. My breaking point was I never owned a full-length mirror. I always looked in the bathroom mirrors, face, makeup on, hair, walked out the door.
Mm-hmm.
Was at a friend's house, spending the night. We're having a garage sale the next morning. I got up that morning, took a shower, got out of her shower. On the back of her bathroom door was a full-length mirror.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked at myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, oh my gosh, what have I done? I am my mother.
Mm-hmm.
Because my mother was short and stout.
Mm-hmm.
And from that day on, I went and I counted my calories. I took the time to look and see what I was eating, and I lost 70 pounds.
That's wonderful. Yeah.
You know, the struggle is, unlike your mom, which I wish, now I'm up on that uphill again.
Mm-hmm.
So I understand your struggle.
Mm-hmm.
I really can.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is a struggle.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think people, you know, some people have never had the struggle of being overweight.
Right, right. Yeah, and we know, I mean, I talk about in the denial and truth chapter, I talk about, we do know, science knows, we know from science that there are some genetic things that work too in some people's lives. All you have to do is look at my family and you would know that. We're short and stout and all have weight problems.
Right.
But that's one of those things that I just had to face and realize, you know, I personally don't have a problem with drinking too much alcohol.
Right.
Some people are genetically inclined towards that. My, if you want to call it lot in life or my struggle in life, whatever it happens to be, is the weight. And because of genetics, I do have to work probably harder than a lot of other people would in order to both lose and to maintain. And you're right. The maintenance is the part that so many people have a hard time with. And that's why that statistic that 90 to 95% of people who lose 100 or more gain it back. I mean, that right there is proof in the pudding, pun intended.
Yeah. Where is that pudding?
Right.
Sorry.
No, I mean, that's just, it's just a perfect example of that struggle, which becomes another struggle in and of itself, because you feel this victory, you've gone, you know, you've had this success, you feel really good about it, feel really good about yourself, but it opens up an entire kind of new way of then having to do things in order to maintain that success.
Yes. If somebody wants to purchase your book, how do they go about doing that?
The easiest easiest and most efficient way to get it is to go to my website, which is hopefortheheavy.com. There's a tab right there that says book. And if you click on that tab, the links to Amazon for both the ebook and the print version are right there. So you don't have to go through the search process on Amazon directly. Just go to my website and click on book, and it'll take you right where you need to go to get one.
So you can actually either buy a book, or you can read it on your computer?
You can read it if you have a Kindle account. Either a Kindle reader, or there is a computer version of Kindle as well.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. So what's up next for you?
That's a great question. Well, I'm spending these next few months really marketing and working to promote the book and to get it into the hands of those who I think would really benefit from reading it. I have other books kind of swirling around in the back of my mind. It remains to be seen based on the success of this one.
Right, exactly.
Or not success of this one.
Right.
Whether that will happen or not.
This is your first book?
This is my first book.
Okay.
I've written a lot of other kinds of things for publications and periodicals, but this is the first full-length book that I've written.
So you are from around here?
Yes. Yep. I grew up in Carland, and I'm a proud graduate of Ovid-Elsie High School, class of 1994.
Aww. And you live where now?
I live in Sarasota, Florida.
Oh, okay.
Because I have never enjoyed snow. And in the book, there's a story about a rather horrific experience I had at a ski resort in northern Michigan that just kind of really cements how much I dislike snow.
So this is just a book about inspiration, stories, giving a little lightheartedness to some struggles and some hurt.
Yeah, I mean, it's not designed, I think, entirely as an inspirational kind of a read. I end with my motivation for writing it and for releasing it to the world is that I want people to not give up and to look for ways to find hope in the midst of any struggle.
Right.
So, I mean, people who don't have a weight problem, I think, would really resonate with a lot of what they read in the book also. I chose to take, it's short vignettes from my episodes and things that have happened to me over the years that people who've never had a weight problem might not understand. You know, a good example of that is I have a chapter called Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. You know, I had to get on an airplane to get down here. And as an overweight person, the look of horror on people's faces as you come down that airplane aisle, much less trying to use the restroom on the airplane.
Yeah, wow.
And, you know, just things like that that the overweight population deals with and has to think about, that those who don't have a struggle would have no clue necessarily of what it's like to have this lens in front of you all the time in terms of how you interact with the world.
Yeah.
But there's a section of some more serious type things too. That's the section you'll cry. And then there's also a section where I talk about my successes in the past and what I'm doing right now to try and get myself back down to a healthier weight again, along with just some general encouragement to never give up.
Yeah.
No. Never lose hope.
Never.
Every day is a new opportunity.
There's always a light at the end of the tunnel.
Mm-hmm.
You just have to wait for it if you can't see it, because it will shine.
Right. One of the things, too, that's been really helpful for me when I think about hope and what my ultimate goal is, I don't focus on a number.
Right.
And I try not to focus on what I look like. That's
right.
Hard for everyone. My goal is health. I want to be healthy, and I want to be around for as long as possible without pain and suffering.
Right.
So that's really a powerful motivator for me.
Right.
And I think setting that kind of goal is a better kind of goal to look forward to than trying to hit some arbitrary number that somebody tells you you're supposed to weigh.
Right. John Stanton, author of Fat, A Life Unfiltered. Go to his website, hopefortheheavy.com. Thank you for joining us today, John.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm Sandy Okanicki, your host for today's In Focus program. Have a great day.